One of saving a stranger's life was as simple as a cheek swab. After losing his mother to blood cancer when he was just 4 years old, our guest has spent the last 3.5 years of his life turning that loss into a one-man mission to register bone marrow donors and save lives. Stay tuned. We're about to hear an incredible story of grit, purpose, and paying it forward.
Welcome to Your Next Mission, the nation's number one video podcast on military transition and leadership. We tell the stories of those who served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition and financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now, here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Thanks for joining us. Before we get started, I'd like to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USAA, where we take care of our own. With additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, together they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families. I say it every week. We love them too. Now I'm excited to introduce today's guest, Sergeant Kristen S. Sutton, a U.S. Army soldier who built an Army-wide bone marrow donor campaign called Operation Ring the Bell from the ground up. He's one of the most determined young non-commissioned officers I think I've ever met. Sergeant Sutton, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Sergeant Major. It's a pleasure
Thanks so much for coming on. I like talking to Army soldiers, especially young Army soldiers, so I appreciate you coming on. Hey, we got a lot to talk about. Before we get started, though, would you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely, yeah. So my name's Sergeant Christian Sutton. I'm from South Carolina. I joined the Army in 2020 and just spent the last 5 years over at Fort Bliss. And that was where I really started locking into this this idea I had, which was to just start doing bone marrow registry drives as a hobby. And I just started doing them in my spare time. And some years down the line, here we are. And we're now leading it at an Army-wide scale.
Sergeant Sutton, your whole mission started in a really unlikely place, at a punk rock concert in El Paso while helping Afghan refugees. Take us back to that first duty station and tell us how it all began.
Absolutely, Sergeant Major. My first duty station was Fort Bliss in 2021. I got there around July. In 2021, around, a little after July is when we pulled out of Afghanistan. I was told, hey, we're deploying to Afghanistan, or we're going to Afghanistan. And then we pulled out and I found out Afghanistan was coming to us. So the first year of my time in the Army, active duty Army, was working with the Afghan refugees that we brought over who helped us over there as they transitioned to become, citizens of the U.S. Really, really long shifts, about 14-hour shifts a day. And I absolutely love the work. I've been learning Farsi from one of the refugees so I could be a translator, things like that. Those 14-hour days, 7 days a week. The rare day you got time off, you'll take anything you can do. Yeah. Just go relax. So I got invited to go to a punk rock concert. I hate punk rock, but any shelter in a storm, I was like, absolutely. What is it? A thing? It's not my barracks room. It's not a bus. It's not a tent. I'll go for it. I started to like punk rock a little bit more after that concert. But when I was there, I didn't notice the band so much. The band were great, but I didn't notice them nearly as much. I didn't notice the mosh pit as much as I noticed a table right next to the mosh pit. That was Punk Rock Saves Lives, and they were registering everyone who walked in as bone marrow donors. They were giving them a cheek swab. And there was something about that that image of like that genuine humanitarian effort being right next to the chaos of a mosh pit that made me think, I could probably work in the Army. I put that in my pocket, and once we wrapped up with Operation Allies Welcome, and I went back to normal duties as usual, I reached back out to Punk Rock Saves Lives on Instagram and got linked up with Sleep to Life, and that was how I started doing bone marrow registry drives on Fort Bliss.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Sergeant, there's a reason this is so personal for you. Would you share the story about your mother and what happened when you donated?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the chances of someone being next to donate it's really, really unlikely. It's a 1 in 430 chance across your lifetime that if you register that you will ever be contacted about it, whether it's preliminary or actually donate, it's just even more unlikely. So in the middle of me running and pushing this huge army-wide campaign, being what is essentially the face of bone marrow in the military, I matched the donate, which was so unlikely. I remember when they called, it was a call from Sleep to Life, and I was like, hey, what do y'all need? And it was not anyone I'd worked before with a very professional tone. And they were like, hello, Christian Sutton. I just wanted to call to inform you. And I think I screamed, no, no way. And I had to mute the phone so I could like run around the room. And I told them, hey, wherever you need to donate, I'll go. I don't care. So the process is they do a blood test, and then they ask you, we're going to donate. And I said, I don't care. Wherever you want to send me, I'll walk there. Whatever is more convenient for you and that patient, I'll donate anywhere. I'll donate the trailer park. So they picked Charleston, South Carolina, just at a random, probably just because I'm from South Carolina. And once I got picked to donate, and I was at the airport on my way to go to Charleston, South Carolina to do that 5-day process, I let my grandmother know, hey, I'm going to be in the state. I'm going to be in Charleston. I'm donating bone marrow in USC. If y'all want to pop by, feel free to come and visit because they live nearby. And she said, oh, you've been there before. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, when you're a baby. So that's where your mother fought cancer. And I didn't know any of this. And in the airport bathroom, she sent me a little breakdown, and then she sent me a link to a website that was angelfire.com. That was where she, my grandmother, journaled my mother's entire fight with cancer to the day 24 years prior, or 20 years before. And I didn't know about this website at all. So that was a lot to contend with on that flight to Charleston. But when I got there and I went to the hospital, I started reading that website, and there were pictures, and I was seeing it was the same clinics, the same waiting rooms, the same beds. Hopefully not the same beds for 20 years ago, but same spot. that were in all of those pictures. It was the exact same place. And I also noticed to the day, it was the same days 20 years before. So I was able to, while doing my donation process, be able to walk through that hospital and like kind of follow her fight with cancer, where I have all the details. Some of the nurses were still there. The doctor, or her doctor, had just retired and a wing named after him. And then the day I donated was the day that those entries stopped. On that website, and that was the day I became older than her. That was her last day alive, 20 years before, to the day. That was when I became older than her. She was 24, I became 24, three minutes and 21 days.
Wow. You know, I believe that God put his hand on you and touched you to put you the right place at the right time, but that's incredible.
It got really personal for me after that.
And donating bone marrow is really, really easy. I think that's also really important to cover. I donated, and it was easy. So, Sergeant Major, when you think about donating bone marrow, where does your mind normally go to?
I really don't know much about it. I guess go to the hospital, or they're going to put a needle in your arm or something. I'm not sure what you do.
Yeah, so a lot of people think it's a spine tap, or they think it's they drill into your bone or your leg, or essentially, bottom line, they think it's super painful. And I always say in my briefs, I'm not a good enough salesman to convince anyone to get a spine tap, which thankfully I don't have to. If you're donating bone marrow, it's like you've donated plasma before, right, Sergeant Major?
No, I am not.
Plasma, platelets, things like that?
Nope, never.
Well, that's where many people have. I always ask soldiers if they've ever donated for some extra soda money. or they take.
I never did it because the problem I had, I took so many shots and I had so many stuff, and they always said my blood wasn't probably the right kind of. I don't know. They just never took mine anyway.
Yeah. Lots of people end up doing it because, for a little extra money. And it's the exact same process, right? They take through apheresis. They take your blood out. They cycle out everything but the red blood cells, the cells they want, and they put the rest back in, and then you just walk off. It's the exact same process with donating bone marrow. They take your blood out, they cycle out bone marrow stem cells, and they put the rest back in. And those stem cells are what they use now instead of taking anything out of your bones directly. So donating bone marrow is just as easy as donating plasma now.
Yeah. You gave your stem cells to somebody in Charleston, didn't you? Who's the lady in Charleston that you gave your bone marrow to?
So I got matched to donate in the middle of me doing this huge campaign. I had registered, I was 80% of the U.S. or the DOD's total donations that year. And I'd increased the Army by 15 times what they had before, from 800 to 15,000 that year. In the middle of that, I got matched to donate, which is crazy. They just called me and let me know that I was matching to donate to a 72-year-old grandmother in Illinois. And that's all I know. I know she had, leukemia, but all I know is a 72-year-old grandmother in Illinois who I matched so quickly, so soon after I had registered, only 2 years, which is quick, that I assume she'd already been looking for a donor for quite a while.
My goodness. Does it take, I guess we're going to talk about it in a little while, but I'm going to ask you now, does it take a long time to find a donor? Usually, I guess, obviously it does.
For a lot of people, it really does. And it goes by your ethnicity. So your chances of being able to find a donor depend on if your donor, your specific donor, you have a donor, if you ever need a bone marrow, that's just somewhere in the world. And they have a name, first name, last name. It's not like donating blood where it's just whoever matches your blood type. It's you exactly genetically. So you have to hope they're on the donor database, and your chances of finding it are dependent on your ethnicity. Because the more people who are of your ethnic group that are in the database, the better chances you have, but there's not enough. So white people have a 79% chance of finding a donor because Germany has 80% of their population on the donor database, and black people have a 25% chance of finding a donor because there's not enough black people on the donor database, and it goes by. It's about an average chance of finding a donor is about, on average, 50% just across all the ethnicities. But it's really white people at 79%. And then the second highest is, I believe, Hispanics at 45.
Yeah, I wonder why we don't talk more about it. Probably, I guess, if you're not involved or you don't have somebody that has some kind of problem that needs that bone marrow, you just don't say anything about it. Well, we ought to, I guess we need to, that's what we're doing on the show today, to educate people. But are we putting enough information out nationwide about all the stuff that's going on with bone marrow?
No, definitely not. Yeah. I think it's a huge cultural thing. Yeah. I think there's a lot of stigma and... we as a country have just decided that donate bone marrow.
There's probably a lot, just like me, there's a lot of myths about giving bone marrow. Yeah, yeah.
Everyone has just decided, it's painful. It's, they crack your bone open and suck it out with a bendy straw or something. So no one knows about it. And the education they're putting out is clearly not doing enough if I can find no one who knows how they actually donate.
Yeah, yeah, that's a shame. Hey, we need to take a quick break. This is... this is really interesting. It's really important. But when we come back, I want to talk about how you took one-man effort at Fort Bliss. I guess you was at Fort Bliss at the time, and grew it into a campaign that's now reaching across the entire Army. And what a heck of an accomplishment that is. So please stay right there. We'll be right back.
Please, Simon.
This is Your Next Mission video podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant in the Army. If you're enjoying this discussion, I know that you got to be, because we're talking about saving lives. We're talking about something, I got to be honest with you, I didn't know anything about. I really hadn't thought about it. I guess you have to be involved personally to maybe be interested in it. But it's important for us to understand. It's important for us to learn about bone marrow. And that's what we're going to do today on the show. So please like us click on that subscribe button below and be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after a word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. And USAA.
A century ago, our founders made a promise to always take care of their own. That promise is still at the heart of everything we do and why our members know we'll do what's right. Because at USAA, we take care of our own.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with Sergeant Kristen S. Sutton, founder of the U.S. Army Bone Marrow Donor Campaign and a living bone marrow donor himself. Before we get back to our discussion, I want to let you know about a way to support the work we're doing on behalf of the veterans and their families here at the American Freedom Foundation. If you have a used vehicle you're planning on getting rid of or some property you don't have any plans for, you can donate it. Visit our website at AmericanFreedomFoundation.org/donate and click on that vehicle donation button or that home donation button to support our work. We really would appreciate your support. Sergeant Sutton, you were a junior enlisted soldier with no budget, no title. How did you actually get this, you know, get this program off the ground? That's incredible. I don't know many Sergeant E5s that could do what you've done, but go and tell us, how'd you get it off the ground?
Well, I just started walking into battalion offices and asking. I would walk in and I would look confused and lost. And then the minute someone came up and said, "Hey, can I help you?" I would snap into them and go, "Hey, actually, yes, you can. I'm a PFC Christian Sutton or a PF Specialist Sutton. Can I talk with your ops sergeant major about doing a bone marrow donor registry drive?" And I'd say, "Hi, I run Fort Bliss's bone marrow registry program," which was true by default, because it didn't exist. There hadn't been any drives on Bliss in over 10 years. And I just kept doing those, just going battalion, battalion. Whenever I had spare time, just as a normal soldier in an engineering battalion, I would get kits from Sleep to Life. They send them to whoever wants to do drives for free, cover all the costs, thankfully, because I couldn't afford it. I would just go get in front of soldiers. I hated public speaking, hated it. but it was more of a personal challenge to just get out in front of these battalions and, maybe stop, having a panic attack halfway through all my briefs. And, I realized after about 6 months of doing that, that, I had registered 2,300 people. The only record was on my notepad app on my phone. And I asked Salute to Life, I was pretty proud of that number, and I asked Salute to Life, "Hey, how am I holding up to the rest of the Army?" Expecting me to be like some small fraction. And they let me know that the Army had registered only 800 people that year. So I was stumped. I had more than doubled. I had eclipsed the Army as a whole branch on total registrations. And I didn't see that as so much as an accomplishment, as more of a problem. More of a gap that I clearly was able to fill. So I started helping other soldiers do drives at other bases. I started creating resources, taking what I did, figuring out how to put it into like a product I can just give to them, like guides.
Well, did your chain of command get involved with you at all? I mean, your sergeant major, commander, company commander, whatever. Did anybody get involved with you, try to help you a little bit?
Well, as far as my my company command team and my battalion and my they didn't really know what I was doing. They were
supportive. Didn't know what you was doing. Oh, yeah.
They were supportive, but they were like, good. They were like, "Hey, we're not getting in trouble yet. Go have fun." And if I needed support, then answer questions. My brigade surgeon was incredibly supportive. He was the driving force in me figuring out how to do any of that. Like, you can't just get the idea as somebody who's been in the Army for, a year and a half, 2 years, to walk into a random battalion office and talk to their sergeant major without somebody saying they got your back if you get in trouble. So I immense support from my brigade surgeon, and my command team supported me just, you know, make it work. But I was doing it all in my spare time. If there was nothing going on at work, I'd just go to my corporal and I'd say, hey, corporal, can I go do meetings? I'll just go walk into random units.
Yeah. Did you ever get anybody other than yourself at that level to support you? I mean, like other guys in your platoon or company, did you ever say, hey, look, let me help you a little bit?
No. As far as Bliss went, up until I even left, I was the only person actively doing drives on Bliss until it was codified.
Yeah. Hey, what you didn't stop at Fort Bliss. How did you grow into something Army-wide? How'd you get anybody to go Army-wide with your program? I understand it's going pretty good now. I hope it's going pretty good.
Oh, it's going very good. So from just doing it around Fort Bliss, I started a social media account, started helping other soldiers at other bases do drives. And I built like this loose network of people who were just, you know, just doing drives. We kept in contact. They'd tell me how they were doing. If they had questions, I'd answer. If they needed, like, you know, help preparing some product to present to their unit, I'd help them with that. Until I did my biggest drive, which was at the hospital on Fort Bliss. I did the largest hospital drive ever done in the military. I was able to register 700 people in like a week and a half. That drive hospitalized me. I ended up working myself into a coma. I had to be on a breathing tube. And when I woke up, I realized, oh man, I almost just died with the Army's bone marrow program. I continue.
That's not good.
So, yeah, I was like, this isn't a good, I shouldn't be the sole point of failure for this. So my CG was coming to give me an ARCOM. And when he gave me an ARCOM, I shoved a 32-page continuity book I built that morning. It was that morning after I got out of the hospital into his hand and said, hey, if you like what I do, why don't you do it? Here's how you can. And he said yes. And we codified a program at Fort Bliss, the first that ever existed in the Army. And from there, we started. I took that web of soldiers all across the Army doing drives and just brought them together. And we started open door policing CG after CG and getting in front of leaders.
And was these all young Sergeant E5s or Spec 4s?
Not even E5s at the time. We didn't have any sergeants at that time. It was all PFCs. It was all PFCs and specialists.
Yeah,
it was one lieutenant. That was our big rank.
Oh, yeah. Lieutenant's like a... Go ahead. Never mind. Go
ahead. No, he got beat up more than any of us. He got the worst out of it. But at that time, yeah, it was really... It was just junior soldiers. And we like figured out like the maximum amount that we could get, like how far we could push it without getting in trouble. And we just kept doing social media, and we eventually got invited to AUSA, the Army National Conference.
Yeah. And, I was probably there. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think you were. And, I spent months preparing for that conference because our plan was a little horde of 4 E4s and 1 lieutenant. And we just went
now, wait a minute. You all 4 privates and lieutenant went to AUSA, all 4 of you went, or 5 of you went? Oh, this is getting better and better.
And for the listeners, AUSA is not a place any of us should be, especially.
Oh, no. You should go there because you learn a lot about the Army. Oh, yeah. I think, yeah. Go ahead.
But for us just walking in with no context for AUSA,
it's probably not a good idea.
I didn't understand how big of a company AUSA was, or how much rank would be there. If you walk in and you see, you know, force comm commander, 4-star general, 3-star general, 4, so many stars, you think you're dizzy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little intimidating.
Well, I don't know. I'm probably off a little bit in the number, but usually it's somewhere around 30,000 people that are there. And it's all senior leadership, non-commissioned officers and officers in the United States Army are at that conference.
Yeah.
So you went to the right one if you get a point of contact. But keep going. This is getting better and better for me.
Yeah, so we went there with, actually I have them right here. Let me go through my little collection here. I had my AUSA challenge coins.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Challenge coins that I make. You have one in the mail on the web.
Yeah. All right. I'm looking forward to that. Yep.
And we have them with little business cards on the top.
Uh-huh.
Because now it's not a gift. You can give it to a CG without it being against the rules. because it's a business card. It's not a gift. It's not a challenge coin anymore. It's a business card. And okay, we would just hunt down generals, and we would wait until they finished conversation, and they turn around and see a little half circle of junior soldiers in the same uniform that I'd made for our program, little polos. And then I'll just come by and I'll just say, hey, can I give you a 1 minute elevator pitch?
So you weren't in uniform. You was in a special civilian clothing? Were you in civilian clothing or
yep, military? We were in polos.
On polos. Okay.
With our rank huge, like as big as it could be with our bank.
Did you take leave to go up there during AUSA? Is that how you went up there? Or did you on TDY orders?
I think it was leave. It was permission to TDY.
Okay.
It was TDY orders. I was able to get that one covered. Everyone else had to take leave.
Now, you got to tell me how you bumped into the Sergeant Major of the Army. Now, the Sergeant Major of the Army, I was the Sergeant Major of the Army at one time, a lot of years ago, but I personally know the Sergeant Major of the Army. How did you get involved with him?
We had a list. We had interviewed a bunch of people, and we built a matrix planning out where every key leader would be at a certain time. I don't know if the Sergeant Major of the Army knows how much work we put into talking to him. Because we were dumb. If our leadership knew what we were doing up there, we wouldn't have been allowed to go. But my attitude is, if you believe in something, and I really believed in this, you have to put your face in front of it. You have to stand in front of it. Like, if you want to see a change, you have to be in the line of fire. And if, you know, you get hurt doing it, then you did it for the right reasons.
Yeah. Well, you got a good cause there. But again, tell me how you met the Sergeant Major of the Army, though.
It was at a reception at the end of the first day. It was a big dinner. Everyone's in their nice uniforms and everything. And we're still walking around the same now dirty, sweaty polos and khakis. And we just start running laps around the building until we finally find him. And then I just go up to his aide and I go, hey, can I talk to the Sergeant Major of the Army? And they go, who are you? I go, don't worry about it. Let me give you a 30-second elevator pitch so I can give him the same elevator pitch. And I go up and I give it to him, and I talk to him about it, and he can barely hear me. And then I give him this coin or the other coin. And I have a video of him going, now that's... and then he went out of his way to find me later on throughout those next 3 days in that conference. If he saw me, he would go out of his way to come grab me and say, hey, run me through this again. Hey, let me clarify what you're trying to do here.
He's a great guy, and he's got a big heart. And I'm sure he jumped all over this. Yeah, he's a wonderful guy. He's a wonderful guy. So that's how you got the program Army wide. He sort of helped you a little bit with that.
No,
he didn't.
I gave him a pitch. I didn't really understand what I was doing at AUSA 2023. I just had an idea, and I'm like, maybe it'll work. But I was able to make connections he's on board. I know he's on board, but I still have to get it somewhere. It was only at Bliss. So then we got it at Fort Jackson, at Fort Bragg, at Fort Campbell. We got it established across three corps. My plan was to work from the top and then from the bottom and build them together. So we started working with people at HQDA, at like G357, at all these different echelons, and getting their support while also already implementing and testing it at the division level, and eventually the core level, and getting MedCom on board. My idea was, if I put it all on, like, I don't want to be the sole point of failure. If I just put it on one guy who's in charge of the Army to do it for me, then that's another sole point of failure. I want to have it be established in the work. So I was working something like 19-hour days, 7 days a week, just coordinating what eventually was 50 volunteers around the Army at different bases and hundreds of different leaders across the Army all working together to get this working off the ground.
Well, that was going to be my next question. You say this isn't a one-man show anymore. Tell us about the team, and you just told us about the team. Is that the complete team that you have at every installation, and how you balance that with just being... That's really... all the work that you're doing, and then try to balance that just being a soldier. Not just being a soldier, being a soldier every day. That's a lot of work. Did you do a lot of work during the day, or everything you did was at night?
You would find it where you can get it, you know. I was the orderly room in COIC
yeah.
at at 1st Armored Division when I first got moved to Division to do bone marrow from second Brigade 43 B. I got moved to do bone marrow. But instead, I ran the orderly room, and so I had four monitors, and two of them were doing bone marrow, and my phone was doing bone marrow, and the other two were doing orderly room stuff, and I was just working between all of them. I would just set out like 15 minutes on this screen, 15 minutes on this screen, 15 minutes on this screen. And then I'd go home, and I'd work until like 2 a.m., 2, 3 a.m. Oh, well, and I'd get 6 and start over.
Yeah, I tell you what, your mom would really be proud of what you're doing here, and you're making a heck of a difference. There's no question about that. And the other thing I tell you too is I love guys like you. You find a mission, you're going to drive it. You're not going to quit. You're going to make it happen, and you're not going to hand it off to nobody else. You're going to be involved, and that's how people change things. That's how people make a difference, not just in the military, just in life in general. So my hat's off to you for all the stuff that you're doing. We need to take another quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the big goal we've set for this campaign. So hang in there. We'll be right back. Now, here's a word from one more of the organizations that helped make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Quality insurance will set you up for the rest of your life. And I think that's what Blue Cross and Blue Shield has demonstrated for decades.
It adds to your longevity of life because we want to be there for our loved ones. We want to be there for our family.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Sergeant Kristen S. Sutton, a U.S. Army soldier behind a Army-wide bone marrow donor campaign. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that directly affect you, and we want to address each and every one of them. So please, let me know what you'd like us to cover. You can leave me a message at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Sergeant Sutton, a lot of people still misunderstand bone marrow. I know I did when we was talking about it a little while ago. And picture something really painful and difficult. Maybe we talked about it a little bit, but would you go about tell about the process just one more time? Tell her what it's like.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's say what I'm trying to get soldiers to do is register to the National Donor Database, which is a cheek swab. You mail it in, they process your personal information, they get your DNA from that tissue swab, and you're added to the National Donor Database. And what that is just a resource for cancer patients to test against, to try and find someone genetically identical to them so they can get a donation of genetically matching bone marrow so they can survive. And that process is easy, right? So if you're identified as a match, you get a phone call and they let you know you're a match. They inform you of what that means and ask if you'd like to go forward with the process and where you'd like to donate. They'll have you send in a couple of vials of blood so they can fully determine how close of a match you are or if you're that perfect match for that patient. And if you're identified as that perfect match, now you go forward. You can choose where you want to donate. So I know someone who chose to go to California because they wanted to go see California. Never been to California, never lived there, but they just wanted to go there. And they flew them out. They pay for their hotel, they pay for the food, pay for everything. It's a 5-day process. Your job for 4 days is to go in at 8 o'clock, get a shot of filgrastim, which is a steroid that has you produce more bone marrow stem cells than your body needs. So they're excreted into your blood. And then after you get that shot, literally walk in, you get that shot, you just leave. You go do whatever you want for the rest of the day and night.
Is it painful at all? Is it painful?
It's just a shot. They do it in your arms, they do it in your gut cheek, wherever you use.
Yeah.
And then you just do that for 4 days. That's your whole job. And the fifth day, you come in. They do just like apheresis. They do two needles, two arms. You sit in a hospital bed for 4 hours. They take your blood out. they take out those bone marrow stem cells, they put the rest back in, and they put all those stem cells in a bag, and you're done. They take that bag, they give it to a courier who jogs out of the hospital, gets on a plane, and flies it to your patient, and it's put into that patient that day.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the whole process. It was easy. I donated and I went back to work the next day. I flew back home the same day and went back to work the next day.
Yeah, you didn't have any pain or anything. Everything could just, yeah. Why, let me ask you another question then. Why does the country need so many donors and why does the diversity matter? You talked about it a little while ago, but why does the diversity matter so much anyway?
Well, it's more common of an issue that you might need a bone marrow donation that you're going to need, you know, a new heart or a new kidney. But you can't think about it so much as blood donation. It's more like organ donation. You have to be able to find someone genetically identical to you so that you can survive whatever condition you have, whether that's blood cancer or leukemia or aplastic anemia or sickle cell. Or just going through chemotherapy, it destroys your bone marrow's ability to reproduce itself, and you have to get a donation. It's like jump-starting a car. You get a little bit of juice from somebody healthy, and it teaches your body how to produce healthy bone marrow again. The challenge is just the database. You have to be able to find someone genetically identical to you. With organ donation, you can find them within your family more often. With bone marrow, you're only going to find someone matching your bone marrow type within your family 30% of the time. The other 70% have to rely on that national donor database and hope that their match is on it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So if you had a goal that you wanted to reach, what would it be? Let's talk numbers here a little bit. What would it mean if we could get enough soldiers to register, I mean, for this country? I mean, what would be a good number, I guess?
So as of right now, the about 200,000 people are registered across the year or across the country each year to the National Donor Database. But also about 200,000 are aging out of the donor age. So they're being taken off of the donor database. So what I'm aiming to do is add an additional, through integrating a program into the Army, into certain bottlenecks and choke points. So you show up to a base, you get briefed at reception for your installation. Before you deploy, when you mobilize or demobilize, you get briefed. Once a year, your battalion, you get briefed. I'm looking to see, take that number of, or that basically plateau the country's at right now. The National Donor Database isn't growing, and add additional 80,000 a year to it. And that will mean, rather than us maintaining less than a 50% chance of finding a match, for most people, it'll start going up. And you'll start to see a lot more people surviving those conditions that otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah, that's so
80,000 would be a huge number.
How many did you say? 80,000?
80,000, I think, is that's the number I've been shooting for.
Yeah, well, I sure. Well, I said it before, I hope we can help you out. We want to help you out as much as we can. We'll put the word out and put your show out, that for sure, for you. You're doing incredible work out there, and it's been just great talking to you. And again, I want to say it before we close out the show, it's guys like you that make a difference. It's sergeants like you that make a difference in the Army. But more than anything else, you can make a difference in the lives of not just the Army, but our country. And I appreciate what you're doing, and just keep going. If I can ever help you, please let me know. Any final thoughts, anything that you want to share with the audience maybe we haven't talked about or something you maybe want to reemphasize?
Yeah, I think if you have the opportunity to register, if you see someone registering people at your unit, just go up and give some spit. If you want to get involved or you want to register yourself, go to, if you're in the military or DOD affiliated, go to salutetolife.org and you'll be able to have a kit sent right to your house. If you're a civilian, you just go to Be The Match, which is the civilian counterpart. You just go to bethematch.org, and they'll also send the kit right to you. It's really easy to be able to donate bone marrow, or just to at least get on that donor database. Just being on it doesn't mean you're going to donate, but it means you can be asked to donate, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I tell you what, I've said it a bunch of times, you're an incredible person. Everybody listen to this. Everybody out there listening right now, please sign up do your part. You never know whose life you're going to save. And I tell people all the time, you know, we're part of a family, and we need to make sure that we take care of it, not just the Army, really our country. And so please, again, if you're listening, donate, be a donor. You can help so many people. Sergeant Sutton, thank you for being you, and thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for what an honor it was to have you come on our show. You're, like I said, I probably said it 10 times there already, you're an incredible young non-commissioned officer, and you certainly make me proud of the United States Army and the non-commissioned officer corps. So thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Sergeant Major. It's an honor.
I appreciate it. Thanks again to Sergeant Kristen S. Sutton for being with us. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been enjoying Your Next Mission video podcast, and thank you for joining us. Log in on our website at yournextmission.org and check out our job board and partnership with Recruit Military and Offline, where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job real time. And and follow me on all my personal social media pages, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And if you like what we're doing with Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below. And don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications about our upcoming video podcast. Remember, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Sergeant Sutton for joining us today. Register. That's all I'm going to say. You know, when we talk about his country, when we talk about people that need assistance, you know, he talked about 80,000. Why don't we make that 100,000? 100,000 donors for our country, for people, for saving lives. You know, I guess I feel sort of ashamed. It's sort of ashamed that I didn't know much about that. I didn't know much about bone marrow, probably because I haven't had those kind of people around me, around my immediate family that had that kind of problem. But I know now, and you know now, so let's make a difference between all of us. When all of us that's listening today, just don't think about it. Just don't say, yeah, that's somebody else's problem. That's our problem. We're all Americans. We're all family. And we certainly need to make sure that we take care of each other. Thanks for watching, and thanks to Bungalow Studios, and of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.